Now we can get started into our Bible study. If you have a Bible, open it up to John chapter 6. If you need one this morning, Mark will get you one. And if you don't have one, you can take it home. And if you know somebody who needs a Bible, you can give that Bible to them. So, you know, we teach verse by verse, chapter by chapter, and we're continuing on in John chapter 6. So far, what have we seen? We've seen this incredible miracle that he provided bread and fish from a little tiny amount to feed only 5,000 men. But that was just the men. So it's believed to be about 15,000 people that he fed from a few loaves and a few fish. And we talked about that last week, how he is the provider and he uses the small things, and we should not take for granted the small things that he gives us. But today he's going to make a transition. Now remember, this is a continuous flow. And what is he doing right now? He's training the disciples. He's walking them through literally the things that you and I struggle with spiritually today. We still walk through this same issue, that we can come from a mighty miracle of God. We can come from the provision of God right into chaos. Right into darkness, right into fear. And so he's going to move the disciples into this place from this spiritual high, because there was a problem that the disciples had that many of us miss, but many of us struggle with as well. And that's going to be brought up today as we see Jesus reveal to them where they're really at. And often, guys, when we go through trials and tribulations and darknesses and chaos and things like that, God isn't doing that to see what we will do. He already knows. Just like with the feeding of the 5,000, he asked Andrew the question, hey, what are we going to do here? Already knowing the answer. And so when he allows these things to happen to us, in fact, we're going to look at the scripture today, and we're going to see that Jesus actually sent them into this situation. Not to go, well, let's see what these guys are going to do. He already knew. And then he was going to use that moment to show where they were lacking from a spiritual high, that they were still in the dark. So the sub-thoughts for our sections today is the disciples will descend from that spiritual high into darkness and separation. We're going to see that in verse 16. And then in 17 and 18, we're going to see this storm rising up when Jesus appears to be absent. And then in verse 19, we're going to see Jesus literally walking on the chaos. And then in 20, he says, I am. I am. I am. And he also makes this command, stop fearing, for I am. And then in 21, he's going to close it out with, when they receive Jesus, the entire journey changes. So, there are moments in our lives where God will feed us into abundance. There are moments when then he sends us into darkness, into the deep waters, into the chaos, into the storms of life. And we see that both in John chapter 6. One moment, there's a huge blessing. And in fact, remember, the disciples were gathering the abundance, the overflow, into their own baskets. And then moments later, they're straining, they're striving, they're fighting against the wind and the darkness and struggling with fear. That's real life, isn't it? That's real life. And it's in times like this, when God reveals himself in provision, that he will reveal himself in pressure. And so the disciples are learning that many of us still struggle with today. Miracles don't eliminate the storms. Miracles will not eliminate the storms. In fact, often storms will come after the miracle. Jesus intentionally sent the disciples into the sea, according to Mark 6:45. He essentially sent them in there without him going, knowing exactly what was about to happen. And the storm isn't to be misunderstood as Jesus lost control of the situation. Nope. We're going to see the synopsis gospels of this story, and we're going to see where each gospel focuses on a different part of Jesus. And remember the focus of John. John's gospel is mainly focusing on Jesus, not the storm. Its focus is on who comes walking through the storm. So as we go through this today, I want you to ask yourself this question. What do I do when I am in the dark? What do I do when everything around me becomes unstable and fearful? Who will I look unto? Verse 16, let's pick it up there. Now, when evening came, his disciples went down to the sea. So here's what's interesting, and here's what we must understand. And hopefully we get to this point in our Bible reading, that John is intentionally showing something here. He's not just doing a time stamp of, oh, it's the evening time. No, 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 there's much more deeper meaning to that word and why John includes it. Why did he say when evening came? Was it for a mere time stamp or was it something else? I believe it was something else because remember what I said, they're coming off of the great miracle. The greatest miracle they had seen so far, that they had witnessed. Yet from that point, they literally descend into darkness. It's a picture. The Greek word is katebeshon, which means to descend. That word is important because it's showing a downward movement, not only literally, but spiritually. How many of you guys are maybe on the path of descension right now? Maybe you done descended. I'm done at the bottom. Hey, maybe you're at that spiritual mountaintop. But be careful because every mountaintop usually follows with a descension down, a downward movement. Leaving that mountaintop, leaving that moment of provision, leaving that miracle where bread was multiplied, and now moving into what we would know as chaos. The Sea of Galilee. Interesting that it's called a sea. It's not a sea. It's actually a freshwater lake. But it's called a sea because in the Jewish thought pattern, the sea would represent what? Chaos. The sea, a lot of us go, oh, the sea's so peaceful. I love just laying on the beach. But biblically speaking, the sea is chaos. And that's what's really great about the new heaven and the new earth, because guess what? There is no sea, meaning there is no chaos. So as I just explained this mountaintop and this descension down, this is a real life pattern that many of us don't expect to happen. They think, man, God is on the move. God is powerful. Everything should stay easy. You've heard me say, rainbows and lollipops. And in fact, there's some teachers out there that teach you if you're not in this state of abundance, this constant state of provision and miracle, there's probably something wrong with your walk. You have a lack of faith. And it's really sad when people descend into the darkness, into the chaos. And God literally sent you there. And to only have somebody say to you, you don't have any faith. You must have sinned. What's going wrong? That's garbage theology. And it's very discouraging Because throughout Scripture, we see this pattern that God will follow a revelation with a testing to make sure you got the point. And it's interesting because they didn't get the point. They missed it. Israel did the same thing. They experienced this great delivery through the Red Sea. Could you imagine being there? The mountains on both sides, the world's largest army behind you, and this waterway in front of you. It was impossible. And what happened? God literally parted the sea. And it says they walked through on dry ground. Not muddy ground, which makes it impossible. I mean, parting the sea is impossible. Let alone making sure they didn't get their feet muddy. They just did this. And then they get into the wilderness and they start to cry out, Lord, you sent us out here to die. Where did you go, Lord? Because they saw the 10 plagues. They saw the 10 miracles of God. They saw the parting of the Red Sea. And then a short time afterwards, they're like, where'd he go? He doesn't really love us. If he loved us, he would, Lord, send us back to Egypt. Send us back into the world. Send us back into slavery. Because we prefer that than being in the wilderness. Elijah, the same thing happened to him. He saw fire coming down from heaven, and then he went into isolation with exhaustion. And so even people today, they'll leave the church on a Sunday, encouraged, all pumped up, and then guess what happens? Monday morning. And Murphy always comes on Monday. He's never late to work. We see darkness in our marriage, in our health, in our finances, in our issues, our relations. We go from praising to, man, utter darkness and chaos. Yet the storm didn't cancel the miracle. It didn't undo what God did. He still did a miracle. We still have John chapter 6. We still have that there. So it was supposed to deepen the miracle, not challenge it or cancel it. And if you tie this into Genesis chapter 1 verse 2, it says, and darkness covered the deep. Darkness, an illustration to the water. And God, from the darkness covering the deep, brought order to it all. Now remember who we're talking to here. Remember who's in the boat. They're Jews. They knew the story very well. And so everything that Jesus is going to do is going to utterly speak to them. I am greater than Moses. I am greater than Elisha. In fact, I am the very one in Genesis 1-2 who brings order to the chaos. He's going to point that out to him. So, verse 17 continues the story. They got into the boat and went over the sea towards Capernaum. And it was already dark, and Jesus had not come to them. So, this verse speaks directly into seasons where believers feel abandoned by God. Have you ever felt abandoned by God? Where'd you go, God? You know, I had such a great moment with you. We were doing so good. I felt you there. And then all of a sudden, something happens in your life. And you go, but God, if you loved me, you would be here. If you loved me, you wouldn't put me in this situation. If you loved me, you wouldn't allow this to happen. Listen, it's okay if you're thinking that, because I guarantee you everybody in this room has been there and may be there right now. And the disciples were there. But that's why this story is here, folks. As we place ourselves in the same boat with the disciples, coming off of that miracle and now feeling abandoned. Now, it says it's in the dark, and remember what John never wastes any words here. John is literally saying it was already dark, and Jesus had not come to them. The Greek word is sokeitia, and it means, yes, physical darkness, but it's much more than that. It also means into confusion and limited perception. Have you ever heard the term, I'm in the dark on that? It doesn't mean you're literally in the dark. It means you don't understand. You don't have the full revelation of what's going on. You're keeping me in the dark. You're not telling me the whole story. You guys know what I'm saying? This is exactly what is going on. Yes, it was literally becoming dark, but John's making a bigger point. They came off of this miracle. Jesus is the provider, but they're still in the dark as to who he really is. Do you see that tie? And by the way, this is a theme that John uses consistently throughout his letter. Remember John 3:2? When did Nicodemus come to him? Because he was in the dark, according to who Jesus was. So yes, he was embarrassed. Yes, he was trying to, but there's a spiritual tone to that, that he literally was in the dark as to who Jesus was. He was in the dark about this whole, you must be born again. He didn't get it. And then in John 13, 30, again, we're going to see it. It was in the night. So this is a constant theme. It goes beyond just a timestamp. It means they're still confused. They're still struggling. And guess what? It's going to show because they're still afraid. And this destroys that false teaching that hardship automatically means disobedience. Does it mean that you're not in line with God if you're having a hard time? Remember, I don't know, did we talk about it Wednesday? I lose track of what I say things anymore. But straight or narrow is the gate. That Greek word is stenosis, which is the channeling, the narrowing of to the gate. Wide is the path of destruction, which literally means wide is the path to waste. And then it goes on to say, and narrow, oh, wait. Narrow is the gate, narrow is the way, but they're two different narrows. The second narrow is crushed. It's pressed. It's literally what's extracted. And if you're going to extract something out of something, what do you have to do? You have to crush it. But straight is the gate, or narrow is the gate. But narrow is the way to life. Two different things, guys. One's a gate, one's eternal life. And the way to eternal life is on the path where there is pressure. That's what leads to life. I don't want to get to the gate, guys. I want to get to the way of life. Don't you? In the way of life, there's going to be some pressure. There's going to be some extraction. We're going to see what comes out of you through this testing. So, sometimes storms happen because you are obeying. Jesus said, get in the boat, go. And they said, okay. I obey the Lord, and guess what? Now I'm in this storm. Thanks, Lord. Sometimes we think that, don't we? Because remember, we'll get into it here in a moment, but Mark 6:45, Jesus sent them into the boat. And then he chose not to go with them. He knew exactly where they were going, and this matters because most believers can interpret a delay as rejection. An absence as rejection. But the text never says that Jesus forgot them. Never does it say that. It says he hadn't appeared yet. And that's a huge difference. Isaiah 43 verse 2 promises, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. That should strike you differently today as we're reading John chapter 6. Could you imagine the disciples knowing Isaiah? They're literally living this out and they don't realize it because they're in the dark. So we have that same issue. Don't assume absence or silence means absence. Don't do that. Verse 18. Then the sea, the chaos, arose because a great wind was blowing. Psalms 107, 28 and 29, he calms the storm. In Jonah 1, 4, it was the Lord that sent a great wind. In Nahum 1, verses 3 and 4, the way of the Lord, his way, is in the whirlwind. Kind of interesting. So the sea becomes violent because of this great wind. Now, yes, we understand that because of the geographical location of the Sea of Galilee, often the cold air, and because it's 700 feet below sea level, the warm air would come up and instantly storms could kick up. But this is a different storm. The storm here in the Greek is anemos megas. Megas. That's a cool word. Megas. Sounds like a transformer. But it's an overwhelming force beyond human control. Beyond human control. Have you forgotten who the disciples were? They were professional fishermen. Do you think they knew how to deal with a storm? Do you think they knew what it was all about to be on the Sea of Galilee on a boat and a storm come up? These weren't weak, unfamiliar men. No, they were very familiar with storms. They knew exactly what to do, but this storm was different because this storm was that ane me mas megas, however you say it. Just sounds cool. You got to say it with that too. Because this storm pushed them beyond their own ability. That's a huge thing that most of us miss. Because God will work and take you to deeper revelation when your strength hits its limit. Because if it's within your ability, you're going to go to the battle of AI and you're going to say, don't worry, God, I got this. I got this. I know what to do. Psalms 107 says, the sailors cried out when the Lord, when their courage, they cried out to the Lord, when their courage melted away in the storm. Again, parallel. That still happens today. In fact, often when we fall into a situation, our first question is like, okay, let's evaluate where we are. Let's take inventory. Let's see what we can do to fix this. Hey, maybe my money will take care of it. Maybe my savings account, maybe my whatever it may be will take care of this. And we forget all about God. We go to our own resources first. But guys, listen, that stuff can collapse right before you. And then you're going to do what? You're going to say, I've done everything I can. And then you're going to go out to somebody, tell me what to do. And you know what that person says? Have you prayed? Have you trusted the Lord? And you know what you do? Yeah, I've already done that, but give me some. Oh. How many of you guys are guilty of that? All of us, guys. And don't beat yourself up about it, because the disciples are the same thing. But this is here for us to learn. So I don't want you to beat yourself up over this today. I want you to learn from this. And I want you to see that storms will expose where our foundations are and what they're built on. The sea, Hebrew analogy for what? Remember? Chaos. And Jesus is in the chaos. John is preparing us to see. Where is Jesus? On top. Standing on. A picture of authority. I am standing on. In fact, the actual original language says he treads the water. He treads the chaos. He treads the very thing you fear most. All right, let's take a quick little field trip. I know, we got to get home and get to planting, according to Pam. I know. Matthew 14, 22 through 33, Mark 6, 45 through 52, and John, as we're reading now, all record this event. We'll break it down here in just a second, but let me just give you a quick overview. Understand this, because when we read these, we get three different perspectives, okay? Let me help you understand what that means. This is what? A tissue box, okay? What side do you guys see? This side, right? Maybe, if you're over here, you see this side. Do you see what's back here? Or do you guys see what's over here? No. So if you don't describe what's over here or what's back here, does it mean you're wrong? No. It just means you are bringing out what you see from your perspective. Anybody see the red circle? What's wrong with you guys? Nope, you missed the red circle? Did you miss me drawing it on there in the moment? Now I don't see the red circle, so if I don't mention the red circle, does it mean it's not there? No, guess what? It's the same box, yeah? Oh, and none of us mentioned this. But if I were to describe all this, you're going to tell me that's not the same box. Not necessarily. It's just not from the right perspective. So when we look at these three, we get different perspectives. You tracking with me? It's still the same tissue box. So Matthew is going to focus on discipleship through faith. Matthew is where we hear of Peter stepping out. Lord, if it's you, I want to walk on the water too. Jesus, this is the inspired Bill version. Come on! And what does he do? He steps out on the water. Mark doesn't mention that. Mark focuses on what? The heart of the disciples, which kind of parallels John's verb of in the darkness. Because their heart, it tells us in Mark, was hardened because of the loaves. Means it was tainted. They were focused on the loaves. They're like, man, nothing can ever happen to us. We got the provider with us. So their hearts were hardened because they didn't fully understand. And John has an entirely different perspective, because what is the point of John? To reveal that Jesus is God. So he's not going to bring up, he's not going to put the focus on Peter, because it's not about Peter according to John. He's not going to talk about he's going to go deeply into the hardness of their hearts, because that's not what he's focusing on. He's focusing on the I am. So John is going to be looking at Jesus. So Mark 6:52, this is especially important, because Mark directly connects the storm to the feeding miracle. For they had not understood about the loaves because their heart was pardon. The issue was not merely surviving a storm. The issue was understanding who Jesus truly is. There's a lesson there because we can witness miracles and still miss Christ. We talked about that. We can get really good with managing the Word of God and still miss Christ. Mark 6:48 also includes this strange statement that Jesus would have passed them by. Now, how many of you guys taught that what that meant was that Jesus was just going to walk right on by them if they didn't stop and say, "Hey, who are you?" That Jesus was not even paying attention to the disciples. He was focused on getting to the other side. And if he would have continued and if there wouldn't have been an interruption there, he would have simply passed him by. How many of you guys have heard that? This is not correct. Remember who he's talking to. The Jews. In the Old Testament, this phrase, passing by, means it is a divine revelation of God. So when Mark is saying he's going to pass by them, it's the same picture used in Exodus 33:19 when God passed by and he revealed himself to Moses. 1 Kings 19:11, where God reveals himself to Elijah. So they would have known Moses and Elijah. There's a parallel. He keeps bouncing off the things that happened to Moses and the things that happened to Elijah. And Jesus is there going, "Hey, I'm better than both." Because remember what happened at the end of the feeding of the 5,000? They were going to set him up as a Moses-type person who would be miracle by demand. And he's like, "Oh, no. I'm greater than Moses." So this walking on water and this passing by wasn't a rescue. Here's the key that most people miss. It was a revelation as to who he was. It was a revelation. Matthew adds that Peter walked on the water, revealing the tension between faith and fear. Because when Peter got focused in on the waves and the chaos, he started to sink. He started to sink. Matthew declares at the end in Matthew 14:33, he says, they all say what? "Truly, truly you are the Son of God. Truly." Then those who were in the boat came and worshiped him, saying, "Because of the revelation, you truly are the Son of God." And then John's going to have something that's unique to John. Account. He's going to have his red circle. The boat immediately arrived where it was going, and we're going to get to that here in a second. But this carries layered theological meaning. Christ is fully received, then the journey will change immediately. Verse 19. So when they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea. And drew near the boat. And they were what? Happy because they saw Jesus. No, they were afraid. The disciples had rowed for miles and accomplished little. This again shows us that human striving can't solve what Christ can solve in his very presence. But yet we still strive, don't we? "I got this. I'm going to try harder. I'm going to read my Bible more. I'm going to pray more. I'm going to be better." I think I tell myself that daily. And the next day, why am I saying it? Because I failed the first time. Because I fail every time. Guys, we got to understand. It's really about his presence. That's why our verse is Philippians 3:10. That's why our goal is to know him more. Understand this, the Sea of Galilee was approximately 13 miles long, 7 to 8 miles wide, depending on where you crossed. And John tells us here that they had rowed for 3 or 4 miles. So they've only reached halfway. They're trapped in the middle. Oh man, do we feel trapped in the middle. Not only that, but under normal conditions, this trip would have taken maybe a few hours. But Matthew and Mark, when we look at that perspective, says that Jesus, when he arrived, when did they leave? They leave in the evening, which was the beginning of the evening. Okay? Understanding the Jewish day. And now it says, according to Matthew and Mark, Jesus shows up on the scene around the fourth watch, which would have been anywhere between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. That's a long night. That means the disciples have struggled against the storm 6 to 9 hours with making very little progress. Folks, that should hit home. For us, it might not be 6 or 9 hours. For us, it might be 6, 9 years. Hopefully for some of us, it's not 6, 9 decades. But you get the point. Are we still kicking against the goat? Mark 6:49 says, Jesus saw them doing what? Straining at rowing. Straining. And when they saw him walking on the sea, they supposed he was a ghost. Did I misquote that verse? 48? That's 49, isn't it? There we go. Then he saw them straining at rowing, for the wind was against them. This carries the idea of just this tormenting effort and exhaustion. Gang, some of us are exhausted in our straining against the wind. So you see, this is far more than a miracle story. Jesus is doing what the Old Testament says only God can do. You want to see something cool? Remember what I told you the original Greek was? To tread upon the water. Check it out, Job 9:8. Job. You all know the story. Job. And Job says this. He says, God alone. See the word? Treads on the waves of the sea. Maybe they're in the boat remembering Job. Maybe they are at that point going, man, I can so relate with Job. And they couldn't really. They were struggling for a little while. Not really comparable to what happened to Job. But you can be there and you could be like, I know what Job's going through. And they're remembering the story of Job. And then they remember what Job says, that in this time, he treads on the waves of the sea, and they're struggling, and they look up. Huh? Do you see? I see. The Greek word perepataio means to tread upon. He's literally standing upon the chaos that terrified him. So understand, this changes the whole meaning of the story, the whole meaning of the storm. The storm's not the story. Christ is. The disciples are afraid because they are beginning to realize who is approaching them. There's a parallel there. Who wrote John? I kind of gave it to you. Anybody know who wrote Revelation? And you know what John writes in Revelation 5 or 1:15? His voice is the voice of many waters. Meaning that everything that we could ever bring us to the point of terror, he is the answer to. He is the answer to. I'll say it again. Folks, we're drowning. Emotionally, physically, anxiety, politically, fear. I mean, literally, our world is chaos, is it not? We got this economic thing going on, political thing, people shooting each other, people shooting people who they don't agree with. That's chaos. We have identity confusion, spiritual darkness. And we just keep telling ourselves, row harder, think better, come up with a new plan, optimize, save yourself. If you're part of a Genesis, that sounds very much like the Tower of Babel, doesn't it? And just like the disciples, we've already rowed for miles, for time, for hours, days, years, and we're still trapped in the storm. But the good news is, we're not done with the story. The good news is the breakthrough happens when Jesus arrives. Verse 20, but he said to them, "It is I, do not be afraid." It is I. This is a cool Greek word. It's egoimi, which means literally, I am. I am. Sound familiar? He's not saying, hey guys, it's me. He's literally saying, I am. I am. Exodus 3:14. Who shall I say sent? I am. And this word, do not be afraid, is kind of mistranslated because it is actually mephobesteia, which means stop fearing. It's not, hey, don't be afraid, right? There's a difference. Jason, don't be afraid. It's okay. Jason, stop fearing. And who's saying that? The I am. So what's the answer to fear, folks? Revelation. The answer to fear is revelation. Understanding that the I am is in the storm with you. Not only in the storm, but standing upon it. Before the storm changes, Christ reveals who he is. He didn't stop the storm and say, hey, it's me. He said, stop fearing, I am. Isaiah 41:10. Fear not, for I am with you. And John is going to have a re-encounter of this. Remember, who wrote Revelation? John. So John is now seeing in chapter 1, verse 17. John's terrified is what he's seeing. And what does he say? Stop fearing, I am. Oh, I recognize that. It's because of who's speaking it. The command of fear, the command against fear, is tied to the divine identity who's giving it. Don't miss Jesus. He didn't tell the disciples, you should have got a better boat. Row harder, you should have developed better sailor skills. He didn't say that. Because the deeper revelation is who is standing before him. Let's bring it home with verse 21. After all of this, what do? Then they, keyword, willingly, second keyword, received him into the boat. And immediately the boat was at the land where they were going. Keyword, willingly received him into the boat. This is the pivot point of the entire story. They willingly received him. Now, this word means to welcome or to take hold of, right? We receive Jesus like this a lot of times. Oh, shoot. Right? I'm going to take hold of that. I ain't going to let go. Are you guys here today? This is what it means to receive. And it's when you do this, that's when the peace comes. We hold on to the stinking storm. We hold on to the storm. Jesus, help. Let go of the storm. This is where it becomes deeply personal, folks. Many of us want to be near Jesus, close enough in every area of life, but we don't want to give it over to Him. They want the comfort without the surrender. Don't forget the letters. The letters of Revelation are so important because they're literally speaking to us. Church of Laodicea. Can I come in? Not Jesus, we're too busy having church. I stand at the door and knock. However, when you fully receive Jesus in, guess what we see? The entire direction changes immediately. The other gospels say the storm was quiet. John said, "Now, boom, we were there. We were there." It comes through surrender. And it happens the moment he enters the center of the situation. So 16 through 21 reveals that Jesus is not only the giver of bread. And guess what? We're going to continue on. Now he's going to say, "I am the bread of life." That's what's going to follow all this. So there's a huge flow. But the flow so far is the disciples move from abundance into darkness. Almost immediately. And for us, one day we're seeing God provide, do miracles, powerful ways, and the next day, here we are again, rowing. Where is he? Remember, he's never absent. He was there the entire time. In fact, he's approaching you in the storm. And are you looking for him, or are you still looking at the storm? He is the I Am. That's the center of this whole passage. What you're going through right now, He is the I Am. Are you exhausted because you're trying to row on your own? Stop interpreting storms as proof that Jesus abandoned you. He didn't. Ask yourself whether Christ is fully received into every area of your life or only the comfortable parts. And if you're in a season right now, let's focus on Jesus instead of the storm. Father God, we thank you.